Ávila. Coordinación internacional, Josefina Mulato. Redacción, Isabel Montes, Eliud Hernández y Manuel Bobadilla. Subdirector de Información, Francisco Moreno. Pulso de la Tarde es transmitido en Estados Unidos a través de Satélite Radio Bilingüe.
Están escuchando a WCOM 103.5 FM, su estación comunitaria. Voluntarios son los que hacen posible esta estación y necesitamos su ayuda. Si necesitan más información, vayan a nuestro sitio en la red www.communityradio.com.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carver.
WCOM, Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carborough, needs your help. We're conducting a $5,000 fundraising drive. Our goal is to raise this amount of money by the end of the year. Please send your tax-deductible donation to WCOM, 208 Main Street, Carborough, North Carolina, 27510. Help keep the most innovative radio station in our area on the air and strong. WCOM is your voice in our community. Thanks for supporting us.
You're listening to WCOMLP 103.5 FM, your voice in the community.
Thank you. Hello. This is Wilp's wake-up call, waking up to what's going on in the country behind the news that the commercial media sees fit to let you know. We are here every... Let me say who Wilf is. Wilf is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And, of course, we have wonderful men as partners with us, too. And one of them is right here with me every Wednesday, Dick Paddock.
Thank you. I appreciate your kindness and me joining you.
Dick is saying that, I think, with tongue in cheek, because he knows that this program would not happen without his engineering expertise. He is the one who makes sure we get on the air and makes sure that we have tapes that get on our website. And that leads me to say we do have a website. If you want to know more about WILP, you can go to www.triangleWILP.org.
Right.
And don't forget, in WILP, W-I-L-P-F, don't forget that P for peace, which when you talk, you don't always hear it distinctly. Anyhow, we're happy to be here on this cold day. And we're going to start off with a very happy report of the great success of our 75th birthday party. Dick, did you have a good time?
Yes, I did. It was actually more of a celebration than I anticipated. I guess I hadn't been following how the development of the entire evening was going, and I thought it was going to be more serious than it turned out to be.
But it was serious.
Oh, there was also serious parts.
But it was fun, too.
It was very enjoyable.
Well, I remember when one of our international vice presidents was here visiting us some years ago, and I remember she said, you know, to do this kind of work, it's so important to keep joy and beauty in your life. And I think that's what we tried to do at our 75th. We had music. We had poetry.
We had music, poetry. We had some serious discussion of the program that we anticipate going forward. The announcement that we here in the Triangle are going to be hosting the triennial celebration and nationwide meeting of what's called the U.S. section of the Women's International League, which is the nationwide organization. It's going to be held here in June at UNC. And
this is a biggie, folks.
Yeah.
This is a biggie.
It's a big one for us to handle.
Yes, it is.
It's not unusual because most places that host them have never hosted them before, and so we're doing that as well.
Being new to the game here.
Being new to the national meeting game. So we'll be working on that as our next big project.
And Dick, very modestly, is not mentioning that he has played a key role in the preliminary preparations to have that here. And I want to thank you for your work on that. And this is going to be at UNC, so it's going to be very easy for our listeners to come and attend because you won't have the expense of the overnight accommodations, although those will not be expensive, we're working out, because none of our members are well-heeled Wall Street financiers and are
right.
all watching their pocketbooks. So it's not going to be expensive, but for local people, you can come and attend and you know, just pay for your conference materials, which will be very modest, and go home at night in your own little bed.
Right.
So this is pretty exciting because so many of us can go now.
That's right. We expect to have, you know, pretty much the whole active chapter show up locally, and we hope that there will be many people from the area who come as well. We don't have any specific plans for big, important outside speakers or keynoters or anything yet, but keep looking for that, because we should plan to come up with something that would be of general interest to the public.
And we'll keep you informed on this radio show also.
Right.
And we hope if we have at least as many locally as we had at our 75th, we anticipated that we hoped to have 75, but I think it was closer to 100. And I know we filled up the community church, which was so gracious in letting us have it there. It was a great space for it. We had candles. We had wonderful food. And I want to thank, we had an international buffet, and I want to thank Mediterranean Deli, which, as always, sent over such beautifully prepared and presented food. The driver was so supportive and kind of picked up all the dishes the next day for us, so we didn't have to run them there. And also Vimala, of course, from Curry Blossom Cafe brought over some wonderful, delicious of her food. So we just want to thank everybody, but we won't spend too much of our radio show doing that. C.J. Seward Poetry, The Raging Grannies, and also Spirit House. I will just get that in, who did a great video for us that showed a lot of who we are and what we try to do.
Yeah, what we have done somewhat, and the spirit of what we are doing now.
And some of our allies who had some very nice things to say about us. So that was just a wonderful highlight. That was last Sunday night. And
I just want to remind people about the pencil and paper.
Get your paper and pencil. Thank you, Dick, because we always tell you how to get more information. I also want to mention one of our dear, very dear activist friends who's done so much to educate all of us in the community about media matters. Jerry Marcatus is just back from the hospital for heart surgery, and I understand that he's doing very well. He's at home, and so we are sending love and prayers to Jerry and Kathy, his wife, from all of us for a very speedy recovery. And I know Jerry listens to us. Jerry, let us know if there's anything we can do, because we'll try to be here for you. And I guess the other big news is that today is another celebration.
Yes, very important celebration. December 15th is the day on which the Bill of Rights was passed, or... I've forgotten whether it's that ratification or whether it was actually just passed by Congress and submitted to the states.
Gosh.
But whatever, it's the acknowledged
anniversary. It's the official day.
It's the official anniversary.
Yes.
And the day on which we remember it.
And also we're honoring, along with our own wonderful Bill of Rights that we do depend on, even if it's not always kept to in the way that we wish, and some people don't pay attention to it, some high-ups don't pay attention to it, but it's always there for us to remind those in power that this is what this country is about. But also, we're celebrating the UN's 1948 Declaration of Human Rights. So it's a big celebration today, and Uptown Peggy Mish from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and WILF always organizes a reading. It's a town tradition. She doesn't always organize it. It is a town tradition, but she plays a great part in it many a year. But the town tradition is that people from town gather at the post office at what is now called Peace and Justice Plaza, and there's proclamations read by the mayors of Chapel Hill and Carrboro, and often from the county commissioners. And then ordinary citizens, we stand in a big semicircle, and people take turns reading each of the 10 main First Amendments to the Bill of Rights. There's some others after that, but those are the 10 that were there from the very beginning.
One of the things that's important to remember is that there are 10, not just 2.
Yes. Yes, and we must have to keep reminding some people about that. So that is the big celebration today. And Dick said earlier that this was a great way to connect that to what is happening to Julian Assange, the hero of WikiLeaks, the head of WikiLeaks, who is, at last we heard, although bail was granted yesterday, I believe, is still in prison. And I understand he's in one of those old, damp Victorian prisons that way back Oscar Wilde, they had him there and they broke him there with hard labor. Julian Assange is hopefully not doing hard labor, but he is also in solitary confinement, 23-hour lockup, which means you just get out for a little while to, I guess, go to the bathroom or...
You can stretch your legs.
Stretch your legs a little bit or right. something. Many people around the world are rallying and want to help. And I think I hear somebody at the door, and it may be our guests who we'll introduce in a minute. But Julian Assange has been a very, to me, in my opinion, a very brave person trying to get information out. The government, in recent years, they have put more and more things under the secrecy label. It's gotten where even members of the government say is ridiculous. And
on the other hand,
there
are probably over a million people who are cleared to read these things.
Oh, yes.
That's one of the strange things going on, is that the security apparatus is so vast that there's a million people out of the 300 million in the country who are allowed basically by their job descriptions to read secret material. And it's, you know...
But the rest of us poor schmucks are not...
Right.
We're not supposed to be letting it taint our delicate little ears or frighten us or whatever it is.
Right.
Well, so Julian Assange felt differently and felt that transparency in government is essential, and it's always been essential, and it's always been hard to get information out. I'm sure from earlier times, but it's gotten a lot harder in recent years, except that now with technology, it's kind of gone around, the circle's kind of gone around the other way, and governments are, I think part of where they've been so hostile and so upset is because they're embarrassed. I mean, all of these diplomatic cables, which don't always show our government up in the best light. It seems like a lot of high-level gossip actually goes on, doesn't it? And but we'll go from WikiLeaks. And Dick, will you remind me at the break to say something about an update on labor?
Sure.
But our guests just got here. I know the 5 o'clock traffic is terrible. And I thought, oh, boy, I bet they weren't counting on as bad as it is. But we are so pleased to have two of our dear activist friends here to talk about another issue that some of you, I'm sure, know about, and others may not. And Dick is going to see if he can get a sound check going here with our guests. But I'll first start off with Ruth Zalf. Ruth?
Do it on the fly.
Hi there, everyone. I'm Ruth Zalf, and I would like to tell you a little bit about the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay, and then we'll get back to you, Ruth, and I just want to introduce our other dear friend and thank you both for coming, because I know there's something else going on that you both wanted to go to. There's always something, the Hope Coalition, which we'll talk about on the break. But Francis Coyle,
yes,
friend, hello.
I'm Francis Coyle, and happy to be here to talk about the School of America's Watch and our recent visit down there to protest its existence.
Okay. So both of you, I know, have been going down for many years, and I guess, Ruth, we'll start off with you, and you both will get plenty of time to get your two cents in, because this is something that some of our listeners, I'm sure, don't know about, and even those of us who do, it's great to get an update on what is happening with it.
Although it's not particularly part of WikiLeaks leaks, it still is one of those things that if it were known more broadly, would be very embarrassing to our government,
that,
we hope.
That's a good point. That's
absolutely.
Okay.
Well, the School of the Americas was founded by our government with our tax dollars in Panama in 1946 to train Latin American soldiers. It moved to Fort Benning about 20 years ago at Panama's request and trains roughly 800 men a year. In 2001, the name was changed to Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation.
Oh.
That sounded perhaps a little bit kinder to the ears of Americans, but few people know much about SOA WINSEC outside of Columbus, Georgia. So I want to offer a sad commentary about what has happened there. In 1996, under pressure, the Pentagon released training manuals that were used there that advocated torture, extortion, and execution. Yet no independent investigation into the SOA has ever taken place. And one by one, country after country in Latin America tells about what has happened. But the event that really started people going to SOA in a serious way was in 1980 in El Salvador. And SOA-trained soldiers assassinated Archbishop Oscar Romero. Oh. Raped and murdered four U.S. church women, including Sister Maura Clark and Sister Iota Ford, Celia Ramos, her mother Elba, and six Jesuit priests in San Salvador, and over 900 people in the village of El Mazote. In response, Catholic priest Father Roy Bourgeois founded SOA Watch. That was the beginning in 1980. And since then, country after country has sent their soldiers to be trained, and they're paramilitary. They're not part of the army. And in Guatemala, from 1978 to 86, SOA graduates played a key role in three military dictatorships. 18 had either cabinet or high military positions or leaders of G2, the intelligence agency. The counterinsurgency strategies learned at the SOA and then implemented left 200,000 people dead. And I said 200,000 people. And all of this can be found at SOA Watch website. All of these are documented facts. In Argentina, SOA graduate Leopoldo Galtieri led the military junta that ruled throughout the period called the Dirty War. 30,000 people were killed or disappeared. In Chile, 10 of the officers indicted with Augusto Pinochet for crimes against humanity were trained at SOA. In Nicaragua, over 4,000 soldiers were trained at the SOA for Somoza's National Guard death squads. Countless protesters, journalists, and campesinos were killed during Somoza's 45-year rule. It goes on and on and on. In 2002, in Venezuela, graduates of the SOA were key players in the attempted coup against the democratically elected Chavez government. 100 people died. In Ecuador, on September 30th, 2010, this year, a graduate by the name of Manuel Rivendariero Tello was a leader in the uprising considered an attempted coup of Rafael Carrero, the democratically elected president. 8 were killed and 274 people were wounded. I could continue telling you more about Honduras and Chiapas and Oaxaca, Mexico and Colombia and Bolivia, but the bottom line is the purpose of the SOA is to control the economic and political systems of Latin American countries by aiding and influencing the military establishments. Former SOA instructor Major Joseph Blair wrote in 2006 that, quote, "The hope is that that close personal contacts developed at Fort Benning will result in future U.S. potential to influence Latin American governments, which are often dominated by present and former elitists of military regimes and dictatorships. Countries with the worst human rights record have consistently sent the most men for training. In 1948, George Kennan of the State Department said, quote, "We have about 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of its population. In this situation, we cannot fail to be the object of envy and resentment. Our real task in the coming period is to devise a pattern of relationships which will permit us to maintain this position of disparity without positive detriment to our national security. To do so, we should cease to talk about vague and unreal objectives such as human rights, the raising of living standards, and democratization."
Wow.
Well, to date.
I think you've got a lot more for us to come back to. Well, you have laid it out very powerfully, and what a concise and well laid out history and painful, tragic history. We're going to be taking a station break, and then I want us to come back to Francis. And Francis, you can talk about whatever aspect. I know the history's been laid out, but also I know you, along with Ruth, have been going. How many years have you been going there?
Well, actually, we lost track of it, but it was shortly after Roy Bourgeois instituted the observance there.
Uh-huh.
And you have to remember that the main part of that observance is really a memorial service for the people who have died at the hands of the graduates of SOA. We often refer to it as a school of assassins because that's been one of their main trade notes. We've watched the observance grow from, I think there were 600 of us the first time we were there. And in just a few years, it was, I think, peaked at about 20,000. We just overflowed the town of Columbus, although the merchants there have come to rather welcome us.
For I'm sure.
A little boost in the tourist economy there once a year.
So it's up to about 20,000 from a few hundred, which says something about the powerfulness of this story, you know, and when people know more about what that school really teaches, and I think the manual does that they were able to get out of there about torture. I mean, and this is being taught in our country to people from these other countries. And, you know, in one way it boggles the mind, I guess. In another way, maybe I'm getting more cynical. In another way, it doesn't. But if it doesn't boggle your mind, it should, that our taxpayer money is being spent not on defending our shores, but on wreaking havoc on innocent people in all these other countries that you were mentioning, Ruth. You know, and it's always against the poor, the peasants, the trade unionists, the teachers. But we'll come back to that. We do a station break. I just want to mention that you are now listening to WCOM-FM.
And WCOM-LP, streaming on the internet.
Thank you for the LP. I always forget that. Yeah. Okay. And you can stream us live on the internet by which one then?
By going to WCOMFM.org and clicking on the button that says Listen Now.
Listen live. So anybody who's having, this is a low power station, that's what the LP is, and a lot of people do have some difficulty with their reception. So we always try to say, you know, that's not an excuse. And if you're interested in what we're talking about.
Well, if you don't have a computer, it's an excuse.
Well, that's true. Like somebody like me.
Right.
That's why I have to come down here and be here every week. But I can get it at my house very well, and I can get it in my car radio. So, and I don't have the best of equipment either, so I guess I'm just lucky or in the right places. Anyhow, we're very happy to be here. This is an all-volunteer-run station, just as WILF is a volunteer-run peace and justice organization. Neither one of us have paid staff, but we do powerful work and committed work in trying to, with this station, to get information out that's different than the media, and to give a voice to different members of the community. There's what, Hispanic music, and there's a Chinese program, and there's a philosophy program and a book beat. I mean, there's all kinds of wonderful programming that members of the community care enough about to come here and put out. Our underwriter, again, we're very blessed, is Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street. And that, again, is another one of these wonderful volunteer-run community resources. It's not just a bookstore. It's small, but they've got books that you're not going to find in Borders. They have a lot of books on politics and on culture, philosophy, and they also have posters about all the progressive happenings around town. So it is a community resource.
And bumper stickers. Don't forget the bumper stickers.
Bumper stickers, buttons. And I think Wednesday nights later on, I think they have something about collecting books for prisoners. I saw a poster coming.
Sending cards to prisoners.
And sending cards to prisoners, of which our country, I won't say it's blessed, but we have more per capita than any other country in the world, I believe. We just specialize in putting people in prison. In fact, we've made it a big
business.
A big business that I think is on the Wall Street ticker thing now, but I'm not quite sure about that, but I heard it was. Okay, so if you want to find out more about the Internationalist and you have a computer, go to internationalistbooks.org, and you'll be happy that you did. And also, again, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and you can find out a lot more about us at trianglewilf.org. And
I want to do a little fundraiser effort for WCOM.
Good.
Radio is heard at 103.5 FM and on the internet. We are conducting an on-the-air $5,000 fundraising drive. WCOM is asking you to make a tax-deductible donation to the station through the internet on our website, wcomfm.org, or mail a check to WCOM 208 East Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, zip code 27510. That website again is wcomfm.org, and the address, if you choose to mail a check, is WCOM 208 East Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, 27510. Help keep the most innovative and diverse radio station in the Triangle strong. Thanks for your support.
Okay, so we're back to our guests. Our guests today are here to talk about the SOA, formerly called the School of the Americas, but now it has a longer name, which I'll let Ruth tell us again in just a minute. And our guests are Ruth Zalf and Francis Coyle, two dear WILF members who are committed activists and who both have been going to the SOA for many years. Francis can't remember. It's been so long. He started going from near when Roy Bourgeois got it started, he and Marguerite. What about you, Ruth?
I'm not sure, but probably 7 or 8 years.
A long time.
It started out with a fast that Roy Bourgeois had for several days at the School of the Americas.
A fast. So people would go ahead of time and fast?
And fast, yeah.
Ah. Did you fast? That's such a powerful thing to do now.
I wasn't there at the very, very beginning.
I see.
One thing we should mention is that at some time in the past, I don't remember exactly when, but we actually interviewed Father Roy for our radio show. And there's a fair chance that that show might actually be in our archives online if you go to our Triangle WILF website and look in the radio archive. You might find that interview actually in the archive. I hope so.
And that's a good point to bring up, that all of our radio shows, except for a few that messed up technically, most of them are in our archive, and most of them are timely topics, not just time-limited topics, although a few might be. But mostly, this is the things that we're all still struggling with, issues connected with justice, issues connected with peace. So we have some terrific ones that you can go back to. And we did that interview with Father Bourgeois just a few years ago. He was here in the Triangle. And he didn't have time to come for when we did the radio show, which then was Friday mornings. But it was at Wes and Jane Hare's house. I think Jane may be listening to us tonight. And we went over there, and you and Jerry Marcatus set it up, and we interviewed him, and I was so impressed with him. He is a person with such a strong life energy, these sparkling blue eyes. Isn't that what you think of as a priest? He just was so full of passion and life and concern, because he himself had been in, he'd been in one of the Latin American countries. I can't remember which one. And, you know, when he was a very young priest, and was just, of course, deeply compassionate and concerned for the living conditions. And so he comes at this from firsthand on the ground knowledge. But we're going to go back to both Ruth and Francis. Francis, you wanted to say something?
Oh, yes. We should remember, too, that the local, our own Joe Straley, was the person that introduced Roy to the local community here, and he's the one who got myself and my wife Marguerite to go down there the very first time. And you'll rarely find any movement around this community that does not have Joe Straley's fingerprints on it somewheres.
Joe Straley, for listeners who don't know, you want to tell us who Joe Straley was. He is sadly passed, but after a very full, vigorous, and active life promoting peace and justice.
Yeah. Well, Joe was, for the longest time, of course, he was a professor of physics at UNC Chapel Hill, and he became active in, well, you name it. If we had a protest against the Vietnam War, you'd probably find him there. He was active in the civil rights movement. The more progressive faith communities in Chapel Hill and environs owe a lot to Joe's vision.
And Francis, we're going to talk about Joe. You can't do that without talking about Lucy Straley,
yes,
who was right with him on all of this. Both Joe and Lucy were WILF members, and both of their names are on the Peace and Justice Plaza in front of the downtown post office on Franklin Street.
Yeah, which is now actually the courthouse. Not the post office.
It had a courthouse in one part of it, but now the whole thing is courthouse. Okay, but which is fine, I think. But Joe and Lucy, also they have a room name for them at the Community Church in Chapel Hill, where we just had our 75th birthday. You're right, whatever issue they were involved. And Lucy, just a few years ago, it was just a few weeks before she died, she was getting very frail. Joe had already passed, and she came to one of our vigils. WILF has vigils very often at the post office, and she came in a wheelchair, had somebody bring her, and had a poster in her lap. You know, you don't find dedication like that easily, except from people who have a real social conscience and a real commitment to this. It's not just lip service. So I'm glad you brought that up, Francis. Ruth, so you've been going for 7 or 8 years, and what got you started? Was it Joe and Lucy, or?
Well, I think it was a number of things. The fact that it was our government and the response to what was going on there touched me, because the people who were affected were the labor unionists, the teachers, the educators, the campesinos, the workers, student leaders, and people who were working with the poor. And the liberation theology priests, those people were working with the poor, and they were the ones who were being attacked. They Yes. were being killed. And when I heard about this, I thought, this is outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely outrageous that our money is doing this. They kicked us out of Panama, so they set it up in Georgia. And I figured, we have got to do something about it. And I think that what is behind this is corporatocracy. The corporate powers are behind getting into Latin America, seeing that they can exploit the wealth of the country. And this happens present day. It happened 20 years ago.
And it happened before that. You quoted George Kennan a little while ago, talking in 1948, I believe you said,
right,
about the disparity. He mentioned that they're going to be envious of our wealth. I don't think, at least maybe it was not the complete quote, but the whole thing is also they're rich in resources. And that is... with a greedy nation like our own, and I'm a member of this nation, and I love this nation, and I'm probably guilty of some of that, but we look to other countries that we can get their resources as cheaply as possible.
And their labor.
And their labor.
And that's why labor unionists have been disappeared, which means that they cannot be found.
Mm-hmm.
And in Argentina it happened. And all of these people are people who are seeking answers, are seeking justice. And so I go each year to proclaim my solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Latin America and honor the memory of the thousands of victims and pledge to work nonviolently to close SOA. Now, when the legislation came up, there were only 5 votes short of investigating SOA. And we can do something now before the end of the year to write to our congressmen, write to our senators, or call them and say, we want an investigation of SOA WINSEC, Western Hemispheric Institute for Security and Democracy.
So WINSEC,
Cooperation, WHINSEC.
EC?
EC. Western Hemispheric Institute for Security Cooperation. Mm-hmm. Cooperation.
So this is something that was one of the things I was going to ask next, and I'm glad you brought it up, that each year the gap narrows, doesn't it, we're getting closer and closer to
the vote.
Yeah, there have been votes both to defund it, as well as Ruth mentioned, bills to investigate what's going on there. The biggest impetus for investigation came when the torture manuals were uncovered that were being used. Now, when they changed the name, they assured us that this sort of very overt sort of instruction was no longer being done. However, they continue to emphasize psychological training to, you know, what they call it, training the people to do investigation using psychological techniques and whatnot, which usually is just torture by another name.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not beating people up as the
maybe.
Well, once these folks are back in their native country, there's no control. SOA just turns them loose, and there you'll hear from the officialdom, the military that do the training in our country, that there is some watch over them. But basically, these folks are under the control of the local governments and often paramilitary, but in many cases they're recruited from the military of these mm-hmm. countries. One of the more encouraging things is that a number of the countries have, I don't remember all the names, but there's about 4 South American countries that have now stopped sending their troops to
Wonderful.
SOA to be trained. SOA continues to work with the other Latin American countries in order to put an end to this so that they will no longer send their people there. But recently, ever since Mexico, the Mexican Revolution in the 1920s, it would be unheard of for the Mexican government to send soldiers to the United States to be trained. That was, you wouldn't think of that, but now Mexico is one of the largest presence at the School of Americas. Bolivia Columbia yeah. being the
I was
other.
Largest. Columbia, I'm not surprised.
Really the largest presence there. And, of course, Columbia has right now probably the worst human rights record of any nation in Latin America.
And I think they're granting us more bases. I think they want to use that as a staging ground to try to do something bad with Venezuela, and it really worries
me. Colombia is in a unique position because it is on one side the Pacific Ocean and four South American countries on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And so they border Venezuela and Peru, I think Honduras, and Argentina, I believe. And I think the most important thing to remember here is not only the economic, but the political system that the School of the Americas has always been interested in controlling, the political and the economic systems of the country. That's why they've been involved in training people who've been involved in coups.
In what?
Coup d'etat.
In coup.
And just like what Joseph Blair said, Major Joseph Blair, is to have influence on the Latin American governments. Now, in Colombia, there are eight bases, Colombian bases, with American service personnel. Eight bases.
And didn't they just grant us some more? Is it eight, maybe the more, or more than that? I just heard in the past year or so that they, you know, were wanting to beef up anyhow.
One of the things that was very interesting that went on is that the United States tried to negotiate to have a base in Ecuador, and the Ecuadorian president said, "Okay, I'll put one in Miami if you'll, if you let me put one in Miami, you can have one here in Ecuador." And so, that kind of stopped that negotiation in its tracks.
So, I mean, it makes me sad, though, because South America, to me, represents one of the areas in the globe that gives such cause for hope. After so many dictatorial, repressive governments, that there is now, you know, such a surge of progressive governments. Hugo Chavez may be at the far left end, but he is democratically elected and he has done many good things for that country, however you may view him. And he's also sent oil to poor people in our cities for heating fuel in the winter. You know, I've seen long interviews. He's a very thoughtful and in many ways an admirable guy. But then there's Chile, which is moved much more democratically. There's Ecuador. Argentina's been in, and Bolivia is like an amazing story. You know, they are moderate. They're not far left, but they are certainly do a lot to help the people, make sure that their wealth doesn't just trickle down, but that there's programs for the poor. And there was just a whole big thing, I think, on 60 Minutes about Lula, who's going to be leaving office, and his successor is going to be somebody that he sort of has hoped to be his successor, who will hopefully carry on some of the same policies. So they are economically doing fantastically. And, you know, so there's just so much diversity there. And if we don't try to squelch any uprisings of democracy, you know, we just had and helped back a coup in Honduras.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised.
SOA was involved in that. SOA trained some of the soldiers who were involved in that attempted coup.
Yeah.
Now, Father Bourgeois has traveled to Latin America this year, and there is a big movement of these various countries getting together and working together to improve their strength and their ability to move things forward and get away from the grip of the United States.
Yes, they're realizing that, again, just like with unions, and unity there is strength, and that they could each, if they don't cooperate together, they can be picked off one by one. But if they form an alliance together, that will keep them much stronger. Yeah. And that's a good point.
And look forward to April. There will probably be a demonstration in Washington to close the School of the Americas.
Okay.
And there were at least 22 people were arrested on Saturday. Okay. And they will be charged with failure to disperse or criminal trespassing.
This was on Saturday.
Yes, they did not climb over any fence. They were walking on the street.
Oh, this was at the School of the Americas.
Yes.
Well, look, we're getting close to wrapping up. I want to give Frances a chance to any final thoughts or and thank you for reminding us about Joe Straley and Lucy Straley. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts that we haven't covered or?
Well, School of Americas is just a symptom of what's wrong with American foreign policy. Our whole international approach is militaristic. We have over 700 bases manned by U.S. military, and this does not include
around the world, not in our homeland.
Around the world. And this does not include the Marine garrisons that protect embassies. That is another thing altogether. These are military bases. I suggest if anyone wants to see a very good analysis of the situation with United States foreign policy, the book by Andrew Bacevich, Washington Rules, can recommend unstintingly because it's very recent. He was in the military.
He's a colonel or something.
He was a lieutenant colonel when he retired. He was familiar with the Cold War scene. It was, in fact, it was his visits to on the other side of the Berlin Wall shortly after it fell, while the Russians still had a presence there, and he began to realize how shabby the Russian military presence really was, that the entire intelligence that we were being fed, especially during the Reagan years, was mythical, that there was just a remnant of power left in the Eastern European area by the Russians, and he said the thing you found was after hours, you found all these people selling Russian artifacts, little trinkets from Russia. They turned out to be soldiers after hours, supplementing their incomes.
Yeah.
So this
was such a boogeyman, but it was, it turned
out to be a straw man.
A straw man.
And this led him to question the whole international posture of the United States. And now he's a professor at Boston University and has written several books in this on these issues. The subtitle of his current book, The Washington Rules, is The Unending War.
I've seen him on C-SPAN. They have weekend book things, and mm-hmm. I've seen him a couple places on TV. And I'm so glad you reminded me about him, because he is so credible, because, you know, he is an ex-military man. And so, you know, he doesn't he comes from a lot of knowledge of what goes on with the military, and also because of his duties overseas, he's really seen and put together a lot. So, listeners, let's get that book, right. Washington Rules by Andrew Bas.
Andrew Bacevich.
Bacevich, B-A-C-E-V-I-T-H.
Is it B-A-C or B-A-S?
B-A-C.
B-A-C?
B-A-C, Bacevich. Yes. And before we're just about closing now, we want to give some of those. Is there a thing for SOA that you can look it up, Ruth?
www.soawatch.org.
So let's say it one more time, because get your pencil.
www.soawatch.org.
Okay, so we've gotten a lot of information tonight from Francis and from Ruth, and that's a way that you can look it up and get more information. You can find out more about us. We're the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I'm Lori Hoyt, your co-host with Dick Paddock, engineer and co-host. And you can get more about us on TriangleWILPF.org, and WILPF is W-I-L-P-F. And this is Wilp's wake-up call. We were not going to use it because we started out in the morning, and I realized that we all need to be woke up. We need a wake-up call to what is happening in our community and in our nation and in the world, that it's not going to be covered in the same way by the commercial media as we try to do here on our favorite radio station, WCOM-FM.
WCOM-LP.
LP.
Chapel Hill and Carrboro. 103.5 on your radio dial and streamed on the internet from WCOMFM.org.
And I just want to say thank you and good night to Ruth Zelf.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
And Francis Coyle.
You're entirely welcome.
Thank you so much for coming. And we'll be here next week for Wilf's Wake Up Call.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines of the mainstream news. I'm Janine Jackson, here with Peter Hart. This week on Counterspin, WikiLeaks strikes again, this time with the release of 250,000 diplomatic cables that shed considerable light on how U.S. foreign policy is conducted. The headlines so far are about Iran's weapons and the perilous situation in Pakistan. But one story hasn't received enough media attention: how the U.S. Embassy really saw the 2009 coup in Honduras. How did this cable conflict with official U.S. pronouncements and corporate media spin? We'll talk to Robert Naiman of Just Foreign Policy. Also on Counterspin today, two women are serving double life sentences in Mississippi for the alleged robbery of $11. Virtually everyone who hears the story of the Scott sisters finds it an unconscionable act of injustice, which makes the next question, how many people will get to hear it? We'll talk to Richard Prince of the Maynard Institute for Journalism Education about the story of the Scott sisters and who, so far,